Are listening to the Slash and Cast Podcast Network.
The Baldoon Mystery. The legendary Canadian ghost story. Hauntings, fires, bullets, and witchcraft. Join us as we dive into one of Canada's oldest and well-known ghost stories. Welcome to another episode of the Cabinet of Dr. Mystery. I am your host, Dr. Mystery.
I tried to create living zombies.
Reports that have been made by credible observers of relatively incredible things.
All I gotta do is relax and they'll take me to their death.
Last chance to evacuate Earth before it is recycled.
This is a wicked, wicked world.
We are all evil in some form or another.
Welcome back, Mysterians. Thank you for tuning in to our live stream. So, for those of you who are new, those of you who don't really know me and don't really know the show that well, usually at the beginning of the show, I crack a beer or some sort of THC drink. Today, I am drinking Electro Lager by Stanley Park Brewing. Baldoon was a Scottish settlement in Ontario, Canada. And it's near what is now known as Wallaceburg. Baldoon was established by Lord Selkirk, and Lord Selkirk was also known as Thomas Douglas, the 5th Earl of Selkirk. So, pretty fancy guy. He sponsored poor Scottish farmers so that they could immigrate to Canada, specifically Belfast, PEI, and Baldoon, Ontario. So we could talk about the fancy pants Lord Selkirk for like a whole episode. Like, he traveled all throughout North America and he did a bunch of stuff. If you really want to learn more about Canadian history, this guy will pop up again and again. But we're not here to talk about fancy pants Selkirk. We're here to talk about the poor farmers that came after him and the paranormal experiences that haunted them and their family. But Selkirk, he brought over 15 families into the settlement, into Baldoon, and he imported sheep for them as well. So sheep and I believe it was mainly sheep, but there was probably some other cattle as well. The families established the settlement, those 15 families, they established the settlement in September of 1804. And unfortunately, the land turned out to be difficult for agriculture as the lands were low-lying and very swampy. And during the war of 1812, the settlement was invaded by Americans. Many immigrants abandoned the area, and Lord Selkirk sold his property as well. So, up on your screen, you'll see this little image about the Baldoon settlement. I think I've seen that plaque somewhere, to be honest. So, a couple of these original Scottish settlers, they stayed behind when everyone fled. And they were joined by other immigrants that were in the area. One man, John MacDonald, he moved his whole family, his young family, into the settlement, and that was in 1829. And shortly after, the Baldoon community would be rocked and shocked by an elaborate haunting experience. Rocked and shocked. Have another sip of this delicious beer. Man, that's actually really, really good. I mean, a lot of the beer I try on here is really good, but that one was really good. These hauntings are said to have begun when John MacDonald was approached by a local woman who asked to buy his property, and he refused to sell to her. So since this is such like an old legend, an old Canadian legend, there are different written accounts, but the majority of the sources are fairly consistent. So this is, I've selected a few different sources for this episode just to kind of get a full roundabout picture. There were several newspaper articles about the incidents and a book published on the Baldoon mystery as well. And some of these works were written by MacDonald's son. And the book that was published, it included 26 eyewitness accounts and various photographs and pictures about the settlement. In the first incident that occurred, some female members of the settlement, So some family members of John MacDonald and other women in the settlement in Baldoon, they were all in this barn, right? And they were, sources vary, they were either prepping hay or they were knitting. I don't know why they would be knitting in like a barn. But wooden poles from the ceiling's structure, the structure holding the ceiling, you know, the ceiling together, holding the roof together, they began to break loose and rain down on the women that were below. The women that were in the barn, to avoid being impaled by these large wooden spikes, they had to run out of the building and run into a nearby home. So obviously the closest home would be John MacDonald's, because they're at his barn. So they ran into the house, and these odd occurrences, they followed them there. There was a rocking chair. The rocking chair began to rock violently back and forth and back and forth, and there was no one in it. And then a baby in its cradle was shaken violently back and forth, back and forth. And the women, obviously, they grabbed the baby out of the cradle, and the cradle kept rocking back and forth, and there was nobody around. So the women, they fetched the others, and they investigated the incident. They checked the roof to figure out why the poles had fallen down, and there was no reason for them to have fallen down. The poles were in the ceiling. They were installed such a way that they wouldn't just like break free. They would have had to have been actually pulled out and removed. So that's one thing that I think is really, like, you know, you have to look at it like that. It's not just something that's breaking free, right? They were installed in the ceiling in such a way that you'd actually have to pull them out in order for them to fall. So another thing that was pretty crazy, there was fires that would spontaneously erupt throughout their home. And once, one incident, over a dozen small fires broke out throughout the house. Always, when one fire would be doused out, another would spring up in its place. Now, one thing that I found that was really interesting, let me grab another sip of this beer here because it is absolutely delicious. Just going to shout this out again because it's great. Stanley Park Brewing Electro Lager. Damn, what a great beer. So these fires, some witnesses, they would recall that the source of the fires, it was, they recalled the source of the fires, that they were different. So some people would say that, Some people would say that these fires would just spontaneously erupt and there would be no source. Other people, like this indigenous, I believe he was an indigenous hunter named Solomon Partasung. Excuse me. If you can't see me, you can't see me right now. I'm incredibly white, so pardon me for mispronouncing that. But Solomon recalled passing by the farm, and when he passed by, he attempted to help them put out the fires. So this is what Solomon had to say. About 30 men were watching the house and putting out the fires about it. I was there when the house was burned. It had been set on fire about 30 times in less than 3 hours. A small chunk of coal, about the size of a hickory nut, would drop in any part of the house and a flame would kindle instantly. It would take fire on the wet floor the same as if it was oil. So some people say that these fires just poof, they just erupted. And others say that there was coal raining down from the ceiling. The one thing that I can say to put a positive spin on this, you could look at it as free coal. You could just collect this coal and you know, make sure that it's doused out and put it in your fireplace. You got free coal, right? I think that's probably the only upside. Besides your house burning down and your neighbor's houses catching on fire, you could collect the coal after you put it out. Unless it's magic coal, in which case you don't want to put it anywhere because then it would just keep erupting. It would never go out. It's like the Olympic torch. Except I think somebody put that out. I'll have to look that up. One other really freaky common occurrence was that rocks and bullets, they would be thrown through their windows by an invisible force. The family would, like, members of the family would just be walking around their house doing chores and stuff, and there would just be bullets and rocks, you know, just pelting them, going through from their windows and hitting them in the face and hitting each other, right? A lot of people, there's a couple articles I read where people said that the bullets would enter and the stones would enter through the windows and then they would just harmlessly fall. But I like to picture it like they're getting pelted by these bullets and rocks. So the family was really distressed by this. Obviously, people throwing bullets at you, something's up. So they began marking the bullets and the stones and throwing them away in a river, which was, you know, a way away from the property. Routinely, those same objects with those exact same markings, they would appear again, shattering the windows as they nestled on the floor. John McDonald, he got so fed up with this constant barrage of rocks and bullets that he decided to board up the windows. However, that didn't stop the entity, the spirit, or some people believe, obviously, that would believe that there would be just people throwing these rocks at them. But it didn't stop, because now that they had boarded up the windows, the bullets and the rocks, instead of coming through into the house, they were just pelting the side of these boarded up windows. And that's all they heard. The routine thumping of objects banging into the boarded up windows again and again. One witness, L.A. McDougal, so I'm not sure what that means. Is his name like Lance Armstrong McDougal, or like L.A., is that short for going to L.A., or he's from L.A.? I don't know. L.A. McDougal, he said, quote, "I have been present when the balls came through the windows." So I'm going to assume he's not talking about testicles. I'm going to assume when he says balls that it's actually balls of metal that you would use in a gun. Because if it was testicles flying through the window, we might have a different problem. So he says that "I have been present when the balls came through the windows. I and others have picked them up, putting a private mark upon them and throwing them in the river. In a short time, the same balls, so marked, would come back through the window. At other times, stones would come, wet, as if they were just out of the bed of the river." That is some good beer. Hope I have another one of those in the fridge. I got a sample pack, and I'm down to the last couple beer at the end of the sample pack. Now, if we go back to the fires that are happening here, sometimes fires would start in other homes or outside of other homes that were nearby the McDonald household. One other terrifying event that would absolutely just shatter my perception of reality. This is an event that John went through, John McDonald. So he witnessed that there was a large black dog sitting on the roof of a building nearby his home. That building was on fire. They tried to knock the dog off, They tried to knock the dog off of the roof, but it would bark and it would bare its teeth and it would, you know, like it would growl and bark, and it was not leaving that roof at all, right? The dog stood on that rooftop, this large, massive black dog stood on the rooftop that was on a building that was on fire, and it stood there until it was surrounded by fire, engulfed completely, and it disappeared instantly. So you could look at it that there was a dog there and it just died in the fire. That's one way to look at it. But you could also look at it like that was like a bad omen. Because it was noted that witnesses in the area, they had seen creatures, like dark black-colored creatures, dogs, wolves, bears, and, as we'll get into later, a goose. You gotta be looking out for the goose. You gotta be aware of the goose. So initially, the family welcomed the attention that their homestead received, and it actually became somewhat of a tourist attraction at one point. But the family was concerned for their safety, rightly so. So they moved a few times to homes that nearby relatives owned. And each time that they moved, the poltergeist activity would follow them. Finally, after some time, the McDonald family, they appealed to a local healer. Some versions, it's a witch doctor. In some versions, the healer was a white man. I believe his last name was Taylor. And in other versions, it was a woman gifted with quote-unquote second sight. In both of the versions that I've read, and all the versions I've read, the family spoke to her, the healer, about a black goose that was said to have terrorized the property. And this black goose appeared all the time. It was always there. It had always been there. since the events started happening. Now, one freaky thing, we could add shape-shifting to this. This black goose was also witnessed to have shape-shifted into a woman, into a woman's figure. So the healer told the family that the goose was the source of the poltergeist activity, and to rid themselves of it, and to rid themselves of the poltergeist activity, they had to load a gun with silver bullets and shoot the goose in the arm. The family did as they were told, and the following day, they went out and shot the goose. And afterwards, John witnessed an elderly woman walking down the road with her arm in a sling. Many say that this was the end of the hauntings of the McDonald family farm. Now, throughout this tale, this story, some people recount this as actual historical fact. Others say it's fiction, and some say that it's blended historical fact and fiction, that there was something happening, but it may not have been exactly what is depicted in these various stories and eyewitness accounts. Because you could look at it as some of these witnesses, they probably just wanted to go down in history, right? They didn't, cool was happening and they were excited to go for it, right? They put my name down. At least someone will remember me, right? That's my biggest fear, is that when I pass away, because it's inevitable, you know, just part of life, but it just that people are going to forget about me. So I got to do something to make sure that nobody forgets about me. But, you know, throughout this story, the family, they lose livestock, their home is repeatedly caught on fire, and their farm overall is completely unsuccessful. And the hauntings of the McDonald farm, they kind of parallel that of the Baldoon settlement, which, as we said earlier, was mostly abandoned after its establishment was unsuccessful. So you could look at that connection as, you know, people in history. That's how a lot of things are written. That's how a lot of urban legends come about, is folklore. You start with some little kernel of truth and you build upon that. We could look at this as a true story of paranormal hauntings, and, you know, rightly so, with 26 eyewitness testimonies. There was obviously something going on. You know, whether or not it was exactly what is depicted here. We could also look at this as something that did occur, but was overhyped and overplayed. And, you know, we could look at it as something that was twisted by the fiction and the idea of, you know, playing telephone throughout the years kind of thing. If any of you have played telephone, I'm hoping. But one way to look at it is, the story could be a way for white settlers to claim that they conquered the quote-unquote wild-spirited indigenous lands. Because remember, all of this land is indigenous land, and these settlers really just, like, they just came in and took it and laid claim to it, right? That's all he did, is just come by and say, you know what? This looks like a great place. Why don't we just set up camp here, right? One way that I like to look at it is that this settlement was also directly on top of land that indigenous peoples claimed belonged to, forgive me for the pronunciation of this, Mamaguesewig. Again, forgive me. These creatures are small riverbank-dwelling water spirits, and they're usually peaceful spirits who are helpful if respected or even gifted tobacco or other items, but they are known to attack canoes or steal things when disrespected. So I like to think that these white settlers, they pissed off the Mamaguesewig and they got what was coming to them. So they pissed off these little water spirits by building on their land, by pushing them out into the brush, right? Pushing them away from the land that they wanted to be at. And you could look at it as, these water spirits are throwing rocks and throwing stones, and they're starting different things with the people that are on the land, the McDonald's and other Baldoon settlements, or settlers, I guess. I should see if I should get sponsored by Stanley Park Brewing. That would be a good sponsorship. So before we sign off, I just want to remind everyone that we're going to be coming back every Wednesday this month. And you can check us out on our Twitter and our Instagram and everything else. I'll drop it here in a little bit. And we're going to be doing this every Wednesday. So yeah, I just wanted to share a couple promos from some of my friends who also do some podcasts.
Looking for a podcast all about nerddom?
Want a podcast with an emphasis on representation?
The Nerd Alternative is the podcast for you. Join me, Ram.
Me, Hassan.
And me, Levi.
Three black British nerds tackling the pop culture we love and sharing why we love them. The Nerd Alternative, a sweet melting pot of all things nerdy.
Dragon Ball Z, One Piece, Naruto, all things that we love, all manga that were originally published in the legendary magazine Weekly Shonen Jump.
But not every series can run for 300 chapters and have a hit anime. This is David.
This is Jordan.
We're the hosts of Shonen Flop. Each episode we look at manga that ran in Jump that didn't quite make it.
We discuss what it did wrong, what it did right, how the series could have turned itself around, and ultimately, was it a flop or not?
Run all your favorite podcast apps, and you can find us at shonenflop.com.
Keep on flopping, floppers.
I hope that everybody is staying safe, staying healthy, staying happy. Make sure that you, take care of yourself. It's difficult times everywhere in the world. So make sure that you take care of yourself. And, thank you so much for tuning in. And I hope that some of you will join us next Wednesday and the following Wednesdays. We have some really cool episodes coming up. We're going to be talking about the Tallman House, and we're going to be talking about some monsters and cryptids from Latin American folklore. Thank you for tuning in to one of our very first live shows. We'll be going live hopefully every Wednesday, like I said, so make sure to tune in. And this episode is produced by Death Hotel Creative, hosted by myself, Dr. Mystery. To view more and to grab your exclusive Cabinet of Mystery merch, visit us at notwhatwesay.com. You can check out our Instagram handle at Cabinet of Mystery or our Twitter at Open the Cabinet. Please leave us a review if you enjoyed the show and let us know what topics you'd like to hear in the future. You can let us know either on the socials or at cabinetofmystery@gmail.com. If you'd like to leave us a voice message and appear in upcoming episodes, you can leave us a voicemail at anchor.fm/cabinetofmystery. Thank you for listening, and please subscribe or follow for more episodes.